Welcome back to Path to Glory, the Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. This episode was made possible by our patrons. Thanks to everyone who supports us. If you're interested in supporting the podcast monetarily, please check us out at patreon.com/path to glory. If that's not possible, we still appreciate the listen and the ratings. This is Aman Khusro, and as always, I am joined by my tithe counter of a co-host, Jonathan Davis.
I don't even know what that means, but thanks.
You just count as many tithes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Hello.
What's up, man? How's it going?
It's going okay. Been looking at these universals. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Had a pretty, really, really busy 2 days of work. So aside from the podcast, which is at the same time YouTube, I haven't really gotten to do much. I did get like one of my, I don't know if you're familiar with those like Bandai Space Marines. Like they're like action figures.
Yeah. I saw a picture of whatever it was.
Yeah. So I didn't get the first two. I didn't get an Ultramarine or a Imperial Fist, but I got a Salamander because I don't know. I just was like, yeah, I might as well just try and get one.
How tall are those?
They're like 12 inches.
Okay. Yeah. I couldn't tell from the whatever it was standing on.
That was my bench in the backyard. Okay. They're pretty solid. He's actually in the background right there. I don't know. Right where my finger is right there. You see it?
Oh, yeah. 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 Gotcha.
So, yeah, he's like hunched over. You can pose them. They have different arms. So it was pretty cool. So I think I'm going to get the White Scar one if I can. But they announced the Blood Angels one as well, which I have to get that one. Because OG BA player from third edition.
Yeah.
What about you, man?
I haven't really been up to anything since we last recorded. So
I mean, it was yesterday.
Looking at these universals and working. So.
That's right. That's right. Well,
tried to make a couple decks with the bone guys, I guess. Reapers.
I haven't even made a mad mob deck yet. Like, I don't even know, man. Just busy. It's busy time. Busy time in the spring. So
yeah, I'm just hoping that, I mean, we should have some time after this next release where everything, you know, we'll have a little bit of time without a new release, and hopefully we can get some time for some games.
Yeah. I'm also just like recovering from a sickness. Still kind of sick. Yeah. So like whenever I have free time, I just like want to watch TV and not do anything. So
yeah, I feel you. Well, we only have 30 cards to review or so. So
and I guess then, let's jump into it. But yeah, before,
what we're going to do is we're going to review the cards. We're going to go over patron questions today. And I also want to give a thanks to our two newest patrons. Fry-E and Doomsday Clock with a Glory Seeker tier. So really appreciate the support there.
Yeah, Fry-E is actually, I think he's on the latest video for Tabletop Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
He's a part of that crew. So shout out to Tabletop Sydney YouTube channel. Have some really cool games. It is, I think, slower paced, designed. So Benji, I think, is the host, the game man behind the camera. And he kind of is like, you got any reactions? You know, oh, don't forget you get primacy. Things like that, which are super helpful, I think, to, you know, a newer audience or maybe people who are trying to refresh the game. But after a while, you kind of get used to it. And I kind of just watch it on like 1.5 speed. So I enjoy the games a lot. I actually messaged him the other day.
They do a really good job with the quality of it, too.
Yeah, I think that's probably the differentiator, and it's so good. It's so good. I was sitting down the other day at like midnight, and I just like made myself a PB&J, and I was going to sit down, and I was looking for something in YouTube to watch, and then I like get the alert on my phone that he posted it, and I was like, dude, great timing. You know, this is my midnight snack and game, so it was cool. People forget, but like we love to consume content just as much as everyone else, so...
Yeah, and we've been having some good conversations on the Discord as well. So,
with Fry, yeah, he's been really, really involved lately. So, Happy to have him in Doomsday, and look forward to hanging out and building relationships with them. And then, yeah, like Jonathan mentioned, we'll just jump into the universals that come with Kanan's Rebirth, and then we've got some Patreon questions as well. So,
sure do.
Objectives, gambits, upgrades, 10 apiece. I guess we'll start things off
with objectives. Do you want me to start, or do you want to do it?
You know what, man? Usually I do, but it's up to you. I have no preference today.
Okay. I'll take the objectives then.
Boom.
The first one is perfect strike. One strike, one kill. Surge duel for 2 glory. Score this immediately after a friendly fighter's attack action that took an enemy fighter out of action if the attack roll contained only successes and or critical successes, and the attack action dealt the precise amount of damage necessary to take the target out of action. What do you think?
Yeah, so for 2 glory, like, it definitely makes you think about it, right? And, like,
yeah,
if you think about it, it's a combination of 2 cards that, like, you might have taken in the past. So the first requirement reminds me of Steady Aim from Profiteers, which is like a card that I don't know if I took initially, but when Shadespire rotated, I did. Right? So I thought that was pretty neat. And it's not hard to just hit or roll critical successes or successes with all that accuracy in the game right now, like the rerolls especially. And then doing the precise amount of damage, I feel like in Underworld especially, we play a game where you're just like, how many wounds does he have? 4? Okay, boom, hit you for 4, you know?
Yeah.
So I actually think this is quite doable in an aggressive warband, but even then, like, if you're struggling for a 6 surge or maybe you want to be a little bit greedy, like, I think you could take this because I don't think it's bad. And I actually think it can be a great glory boost for some warbands who are struggling with glory.
I agree. I think it's a little bit meta-dependent. Like, I think last season when Grimwatch and Thorns were top dog, I think this would have been an incredible card for aggro because you're going to get a lot of kills probably. I think right now I think everything we just look at, like, how good is this card against crushes? But I think that if you can get kills, about half of your kills will probably meet this condition. If you're a warband that's, like, pretty decent at this, and by that I mean, like, somebody that has a lot of 2 smash attacks, because half of those will be all successes, and that has relatively high or, you know, solid damage. So I don't know. This is one that I think I'm going to think about, and I may try. Like, I think Hrothgorn can do this. He has rerolls out the wazoo, so.
I actually really like this with Purifiers because they get that Aether Quartz reroll. Now, I know you want to use that a lot on defense, and you probably should. But, like, the cool thing is, like, Miari has 1 smash.
Yeah.
So you can roll an attack, hit on a smash, maybe, you know, kill a skink or something, or even a Bone Reaper at this point. And then you inspire, and you get 3 glory because you count the kill. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I think in a wider meta, this is a pretty solid card. I think one of the things we're going to notice as we go through all of these cards is I feel like the quality of cards that we have already is so high. We have so many good cards that a card has to really stand out for us to be too crazy about it, you know?
Yeah, agreed. But I still like this one.
Yeah.
It speaks to me.
Yeah, I do like it. I think more than I thought I would initially, but like I think it might be good. So, let's see. The next one is Primal Assertions Surge. Score this immediately after you discard the primacy token if your warband holds more objectives than any other warband for 1 glory. I'm gonna turn my light on.
I don't know how I feel about this card. Like, so holding more objectives is fine. You can hold 1 technically. And then maybe spend, the primacy token. Or I guess you discard it when your opponent gains it. So maybe for like if you're playing underdog, I don't know.
I don't think you count as discarding it when your opponent gets it. I think you have to give it to them or they take it from you. I think it's different. But
it might be. And even if it is, then it just makes this card worse.
Yeah.
I don't even think you run this in Mad Mob. I don't like it.
Yeah, I just think it's too hard to discard, and then there's just too many conditions there. So
yeah,
I should probably just skip over it. Proud Commander is the next one. Hybrid for 2 glory. Score this in the third end phase if you have scored 7 or more objective cards, or your leader is in enemy territory. What do you think?
So it is slightly inefficient, but it's not a bad card, right?
I agree.
The first time I read this card, it was like, I thought it just said end phase, and I was like, oh boy, you know, it's a really good card, but it's third end phase. More often than not, your leader is going to be in enemy territory, especially if you're playing into the strengths of the universal set this season. I think it's also pretty easy to score 7 or more objective cards.
Yeah.
So this is almost like a weaker great plan or a Dominion of Death even.
Exactly.
So if you really need a glory boost, or you're struggling on end phase, or you have a particular strategy where you don't want to do much and then score a lot from it. I mean, you have 6 surges in your deck, so if you score 6 surges, potentially 1 other end phase, and boom, you're at Proud Commander. It's not bad. It's not good either, but it's not bad.
If it was 3 glory, I would like it a lot more.
For sure.
Because then I think it would compete with like Pure Carnage or Set the Tempo, you know, those other 3 glory ones. As it is, I think that's what makes me not want to play it, because the third end phase side of it is going to slow my deck down. But it is playable, and you should be able to score it. So
yeah,
I mean,
if people hold to the end in their hand,
yeah,
from the start of the game, I don't see why you couldn't hold Proud Commander in your hand.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. The next one is Sated Hunger. Surge for 1 glory. Score this immediately when you remove 3 or more hunger counters from a surviving fighter.
I mean,
those vampires have so many cards.
Yeah, exactly. It's a Crimson Court card, which, you know, in all but the name, and I really don't think even the Crimson Court are using this much.
Yeah, probably not.
Nope. Yeah, I would just say let's move on.
Mm-hmm. The next one is Formidable Prey. Hybrid. Score this in an end phase if 1 or more surviving friendly fighters each have 2 or more upgrades that give them the quarry keyword, or 1 or more surviving friendly fighters each have a wound characteristic of 6 and are a quarry. What do you think about that? 6 or more.
Okay. So essentially, 6 wound fighter with quarry.
Yep.
Or
One fighter
with 2 quarry upgrades.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Right.
Certainly doable. I think it's kind of good with creepers, maybe.
Could be. I think if you like the silent relics, like if that's a thing, then you could take this.
Yeah.
And then also if you are taking a bunch of quarry stuff with any of the 6 wound fighters, that's not bad either. I think it's just a question of whether you want 1 glory and if this is the one that you want.
Yeah, because if you think about it, like Strength of Terror, quarry card, right?
Yeah.
Which you probably want on Molag/Hrothgorn/Kanan.
Yeah.
Survival Instincts isn't a bad card for 2 of the 3. The Silent Relics aren't bad. Like the Helm stops the first crit, makes it a regular success.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. I think
maybe the Silent for Kanan's Helm. Reapers, if you're taking Strength of Terror for the dice reroll, and then you're taking the quarry hold objective build with, you know, a Cryptic Companion and maybe the Silent Helm and, you know, whatever else. Like, this is a nice option if you need a 1 glory card. But there's just a lot of 1 glory cards. Yeah. But it's
not
doable,
bad,
I think.
It's certainly a card that can work if you wanted to.
Yeah. The next one is Futile Hunt. Chew on that, it says. 1 glory, surge, hybrid. Score this immediately after a friendly fighter's attack action in which they take an enemy fighter out of action. If that fighter is a quarry, the friendly fighter is a quarry, or the target had one or more hunger counters. So a quarry has to get a kill, or you have to kill something with a hunger counter.
So this one isn't really that bad if you have a quarry fighter, or you have a lot of cards that do quarry stuff. Because right. I can easily see Slake Slash killing somebody and then do glory. Autopoddle, a little bit harder to do.
True.
But I you know, it's interesting. I've kind of moved away from score glory for killing someone, you know, like cards.
Yeah, that's. I think because that's the problem. And there's not really anything wrong with this card in particular, other than it's kind of specific to the quarry stuff.
Yeah, I just think like the only ways in which we can play right now are some of the more online formats, and I think they naturally reward play styles that don't rely on dice.
Yeah, so. And just the current meta right now with crushes being strong and some of the big fighters and stuff, I just don't know if you can rely on getting a kill, especially if it's with a specific fighter. So
yeah,
and then hunger sort of might as well not be there.
So. Yeah, unless Crimson Court is like 99% of the Warbanders.
Yeah, yeah. There's not really any great way to apply hunger reliably. Like, there's a couple cards that maybe you want that do it, but I don't think there's enough to make this like a sure thing.
Well, like I guess if you're like,
although we do have sitting target now as well, so you could take both of those, I guess, and then take a bunch of hunger application.
Sitting target doesn't make your
not sitting target. What's the one
on it?
Killing somebody on a starting hex?
Oh, Pitiable Death.
Pitiable Death, yeah.
Yeah, because you can energy drain someone and then take two, right? But
yeah, so there might be a little bit of synergy there.
I think we're already stretching it, though.
Yeah, I just don't think there's quite enough yet. The next one, Immortal Hunger. Score this in the third end phase if the number of surviving friendly fighters is greater than or equal to the number of friendly fighters out of action. And each surviving friendly fighter has four or more hunger counters.
I don't think you can score this ever.
I think this is impossible. I guess if you had a really control vampire build and somehow three of them stayed alive and you got four on each. But
yeah, that's so a you lot have of to work. Have. So essentially, this you play this in Crimson Court. You can only lose one fighter.
Right.
And all three of your fighters need to have four or more hunger counters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And like maybe you could play this on Curse Breakers. You could lose one fighter and then you'd only have to have two with four. But that's
still- because I think Curse Breakers are pretty decent at hunger. But yeah, that's a good point. I still would never take this card.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, vampires, I think, might be able to do it if you just hide in the back. I mean, maybe that's a really sort of control build where you'll just generate hunger and score off of that. But
it's just a third end phase card. So it just clogs your hand up. Like passive strategies brick all the time.
And they already have the other cards. They already have all the other card that's like have 10 hunger counters on the board or whatever. And I think that's probably easier to do with just souping up the one guy.
I wonder if you can do this with like a Lost Pages Turtle in the corner max offset Curse Breaker deck.
Maybe.
I don't know.
It's not bad, but it's probably not better than Avatar.
I mean, it's a bad card. It's a bad card, for sure.
Well, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is bad. the next one is Scant Resources.
I see you trying to make it sound okay, but no, bro. It's
it's bad.
It's fun. Yeah.
The next one is Scant Resources. Two Glory Hybrid. Score this in an end phase if all objectives are held or each player has no unspent glory points. What do you think about that?
Unspent. So interestingly enough, you could go first in a round. You could both have scored nothing.
Yeah.
And then you score two glory, which is kind of funny.
I think that's about the only way for you to score it is you in the first round, you go first and they've already spent all their glory. And so have you. Because if they go first, most likely they're going to score something and then not spend it all. And then you're out of luck. And then in the second round or third round, there's almost no way that both of you are going to spend all of your glory.
The only way I see this card is if you're playing Feed the Beast Grave.
Right, for the first condition?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then you can take this, Coveted Spoils, Feed the Beast Grave, and you don't really need to score anything else because that's like 10 glory right there.
It's true. Yeah. Although, yeah, you'd have to get Feed the Beast Grave at some... I mean, you have to get this one in Coveted Spoils at some point before you get Feed the Beast Grave. Yeah. Yeah. But that's okay, I guess.
Yeah, for Hrothgorn and Lizardmen.
Pretty much. The next one is Tale of Victory for 6 glory. Score this in the third end phase if each surviving friendly fighter is... Score this in the third end phase if each surviving fighter is a friendly hunter. So everybody has to be dead except your hunters.
Yeah. I think...
just another annihilation, basically.
Yeah, it's just no good.
Yeah. The next one is Peerless Hunter. Duel for 1 glory. Score this in an end phase if one or more surviving friendly hunters have ensnare or cleave on one or more of their attack actions, and you have the primacy token. I like this one okay.
Yeah, this one's not bad. It's a cool duel, and it can help like feed into set the tempo, which I don't mind.
That's true.
So this is actually not a bad card as part of like a... I'm working towards maybe set the tempo. Otherwise, 1 glory. This reminds me of like what a Night Vault Surge would be. Right?
Yeah.
Obviously, there's some rules differences now, but...
Yeah, I think that the Lizardmen probably don't hate this one. They have a couple cleaves and snares.
Well, Autopoddle has both.
Yeah.
Off the bat.
So then you just have to get primacy. I guess that's the problem, is you have to get primacy. But I think any aggro... Any primacy deck that has cleave or ensnare built in, I think, would consider this as a 1 glory end phase card.
Yeah.
It just compete with all the other ones that are just like it, basically.
It's interesting. I don't think it's bad, though.
Yeah. I don't think it's bad. I think you consider it, but
yeah, rarely, but when you do, I think it could work.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that is it for objectives.
Yeah, it's all 10.
Do you have a favorite?
It's kind of a hard one to pick from, I think.
Yeah.
I think probably Perfect Strike.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think the only other one that I would really think about might be Formidable Prey or Peerless Hunter. So...
Yeah, I mean, Proud Commander, I don't think is bad.
No, it's not bad.
You're probably right that the other two are... Yeah, you know, there's cards. They work.
Yeah.
We just have
a lot of really good cards already, like, and a lot of them are 2 glory, so a lot of these are hard to consider at all. And then the surges we have are so good that if it's not basically free, then you kind of just don't consider it. So, that was the... objectives there.
Alrighty, well, let's go to the gambits over here.
Yeah.
I guess we'll start with Sanity Siphon. Sanity Siphon is a trap. Reaction, play this after an enemy fighter's move action made as part of a charge action. Roll 1 magic dice. On a roll of channel, choose 1 friendly fighter that could be the target of one of that fighter's attack actions. The enemy fighter must target the chosen fighter with the attack action made as part of their charge action. So essentially, an opponent charges one of your fighters, you can react, and if you roll a channel, if you have a friendly fighter that could be the target instead, you can make them attack the friendly fighter as their new target.
Yeah. I think if it wasn't random, like if it didn't need that dice roll that made it like a 50-50, I think I would like it a little bit more. Particularly against like ranged fighters, that could potentially be pretty good. But I think it's just too random.
Yeah, like I see why it's in the pack, because like the whole Mortec Advanced stuff, right? So it comes with the warband that wants to be next to each other in theory. But yeah, the channel right there kind of just kills it for me. Because even without the channel, it's still not like a, oh my god, this card is so good card. It's a situational, I don't know if I still take it. So
right.
I think you're absolutely correct. Do you have anything to add, or
I'll move on to that.
Cool. Untapped resources. Mm-hmm. Play this only if your warband holds two or more objectives. Pick one. Spend one glory point and gain the primacy token, or discard the primacy token and draw three power cards.
Yeah. This is interesting. I think that if there weren't already like as many good card draw cards as there are in the meta, I think I would consider this one. I think it's interesting for warbands that want to hold objectives and maybe aren't great at primacy. I think it's a nice way to like steal it away from somebody that's better at primacy.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe in the last end phase or something, or power step. I just think it'll be hard to fit. But I don't know. It's cool. Like, I like the design of it.
Yeah, it's certainly a cool card. I like the fact that it's designed for warbands who may not necessarily want primacy because they're holding objectives. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, you could play this in Mad Mob, you know, like, get a kill, react with, what's that card? Where you hold another objective if you get a kill.
Glorious Triumph.
Glorious Triumph. And then you can, like, you know, spend a glory point to inspire one of your fighters, or you can essentially give the primacy token away, draw three cards, get it back, inspire a fighter. It's kind of cool.
I think it'd be a little tricky to hold the objectives reliably with them, but I think that there are potentially some cool things you could do with that. And then I guess for a traditionally objective holding warband, or one that isn't normally good at primacy, I like that you can perhaps get the primacy and then draw a bunch of cards by discarding it, because you're not going to keep it long anyway. So I think it's cool. I like the design. I just think it's a little bit outclassed by like Duelowitz or something, because you're just going to really use that in more situations.
I think outclass is a great great term for that card.
Perhaps the theme of this card set.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll see what happens. Next one is Kayla's Clarion.
Mm-hmm.
2-channel gambit spell. If cast, choose one or more friendly fighters within 2 hexes of the caster and push each chosen fighter 1 hex.
Yeah. I just think it's a little too hard to cast. I think double channel is just really hard. I'm also not really sure. I mean, there are situations when you would want to be able to do this, but there's enough other pushes in the game that I think you're usually fine with one push.
I don't know if I would take this card even if it was 1-channel.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, the fact that it's 2-channel is, like, you know, I get it's cool, you know, like, spells are important and you have to put them in the game. But, like, I just feel like the quality of spells has really taken a dip lately. And, like, 2-channel seems very hard. Like, it's cool, you know, Kayla, Mazik, Quintok, Abyssoth, they're all, like, famous wizards in the realm of the Underworlds, but...
Yeah.
Like, they got some better spells than this.
Yeah, that's true. Let's go to the next one.
Mazik's Machinations. Gambit spell on 1 focus. If cast, pick 1. Flip each feature token within 2 hexes of the caster, or 1 feature token in no one's territory or 1 opponent's territory.
Yeah, very interesting there. There are some things that I like about this one. I like that, like, basically there's no range limitation on the opponent's territory or no one's territory part of it. And I think there could also be, like, some interesting, like, power moves if you were to charge a wizard in and then cast this and then, you know, flip some stuff and mess up their objective holding. The interesting thing is I'm not sure how many warbands with wizards actually want to do that. You know, like maybe Wormspat, like maybe they're the best one. And it doesn't really synergize with anything else, like scoring off of Feed the Beast Grave or something like that.
The only thing I can think of, honestly, is running Zarbag's Gits and trying to score Feed the Beast Grave, Coveted Spoils, and Infestation.
That wouldn't be bad. Yeah. You may not even need Feed the Beast Grave, too. You could just do all of the hold everything once.
Yeah.
But, and hold more. That might be
possible. Well, because Infestation is your warband holds all objectives.
Yeah.
So you would have to just find one, hold it,
yeah,
get five glory for no reason. I mean, there's a reason. So.
I feel like there's probably better things for them to do, but it's an interesting, like, I don't hate this one, and I don't think one focus is too hard. I just don't think there's any synergy, which I think is going to be its main weakness.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Next card, Quintox Quarrel. Gambit spell, one channel. If cast, choose one enemy fighter within 3 hexes of this caster. Roll off with that fighter's player. If your opponent wins, nothing happens. If you win, that fighter has -1 wounds, is uninspired, and cannot be inspired. This effect persists until the end of the round. When this effect ends, the chosen fighter is inspired.
Yeah. So the problem with this one is that it's basically like a 50-50 after you successfully cast it. So it's something like a 44% chance for it to work.
No, thanks.
Think maybe if you were making like a Cursebreaker Magic deck, maybe you think about this. Maybe.
Because it inspires you?
Yeah, because it'll inspire you and maybe you score something off of the cast. But that's really the only situation. I mean, it is a really good effect when it works. And if you have a way for it to reliably go off, I don't know if you hate the 50-50. I guess that's what I'm saying.
I hate the 50-50.
Yeah. That's the problem with it.
I don't know. Just not like... I can't. Can't even... Roar of Defiance, next card. Discard the Primacy token. If you do, give one friendly fighter one guard token. In addition, friendly fighters cannot be a quarry. The effect persists until the end of the round.
This one's funny because I think I want the Primacy token and I want my fighters to be quarries more than I want a guard token.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a really odd card.
Yeah.
Because, like, no way is it ever worth giving up a glory to put one fighter on guard. If it was, like, put your whole warband on guard, yeah. You know, or every, you know, choose a friendly fighter, every friendly fighter within 3 hexes, I get that. That's fine.
Sure.
It's still not fine, but it's reasonable.
Right.
And then just not being a quarry? I don't know.
I mean, right now, being a quarry is a great thing. You want to be a quarry.
For so. Real, dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not feeling it. Call to Hunt is the next card. Discard the Primacy token. If you do, friendly fighters are hunters, and each fighter is a quarry. Each enemy fighter is a quarry. Effect persists until the end of the round.
Yeah, so similarly, it's like, I don't know if I want my enemies to be quarry.
Well, it's like a worse hunting season.
Yeah, and it's a worse hunting season, and you have to get rid of the Primacy token. So, yeah, no thanks.
No thanks. Carnivore's All. Starting with you, each player can choose one or more fighters from their warband. Give each chosen fighter one hunger counter. Each fighter with 2 or more hunger counters is a hunter. This effect persists until the end of the round.
Yep.
It's a good card for one warband.
Yeah. So basically the only reason this card is notable at all is that it'll completely inspire the entire Skaven warband.
Yeah. You get this first turn, you play it, and you've got a fully inspired Fight Class Swarm.
Yeah. I don't know if that's it's not bad. It's, you know.
I'm sorry, if you take a card in your warband or your deck that said,
yeah,
draw this, inspire your entire warband, you're gonna take it.
Yeah, no, you're gonna take it. And actually, because yeah, a couple of them get pretty decent stat upgrades. So,
I mean, they all go on 2 defense, yeah. Right? That's worth it alone, I think.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Scritch is hitting for you know, he's on 2 dodge for 3 damage. I mean, it's a little nice.
Yeah, yeah. Other than that, I guess the interesting thing is maybe there's like a hunger Skaven build now. Because everybody gets a hunger counter. Everybody. I don't know. It's interesting.
Interesting is a good word.
Yeah. I guess you probably just take the inspire and that's enough. But
yeah, I think maybe you could do something with vampires too, right? Stack hunger.
Yeah. So for them, I guess.
It's just another way to get 4 hunger.
Yeah. The interesting thing is the other player also gets to choose. But they're basically never going to do that unless they're vampires, and then they'll say thanks, or they're Skaven, and then they'll really say thanks. So
yeah,
it's just weird. It's just a weird card. And then each fighter with two or more hunger counters is a hunter, and that persists until the end of the round, which like just doesn't matter.
Did we just unlock the hunger hunter Skaven build?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe you take snare and whatever for them, but I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird card.
It's interesting. Next card is Eternal Chase.
Yeah.
This is a really cool one. Each fighter's move characteristic is 4 and cannot be modified further. Each fighter is a hunter, and each fighter is a quarry. This effect persists until the end of the round.
Yeah, so this one's really cool. It basically does what Hunting Season does, but it also sets your move to 4, which is really good for the slower warbands. And then it also messes up all the speed stuff.
Yeah, the one cool thing about warp fighters that are slow is that they're purposely slow, because they... Sure. When they get close, they can do some damage.
Yeah.
If you take that negative aspect away, or check and balance, if you will, and then you limit your opponent's warband from being fast, because that's their check and balance for being weaker fighters, you've essentially just flipped the game on its head.
For the whole round, I think, too.
Yeah, it's insane. It's a very good card. It's a very good tech card.
Yeah, we were just talking about how we don't really like the, or how, and sometimes we've been trying to avoid the speed package. And if I'm not really sure if this will become common, but like if it was, it makes the speed package really annoying, because basically those cards are dead unless you have an upgrade. Yes. Well, no, even the upgrades don't work.
Yeah.
So
can't be modified. So
yeah.
+2 Spectral Wings. Nope. Sorry. Can't be modified. Yeah.
I mean, I wonder if you take this on a 3-move warband like the Reapers or something, and then just.
Well, just I can definitely see you taking it with like Sepulchral Guard.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And Chosen Axes.
Chosen Axes, you know. Even Profiteers. It's pretty nice for them.
Yeah.
And it opens up like Snare for them as well. So.
Yeah, that's interesting too. I wonder if... I don't know. I have a hard time thinking you could fit this and Hunting Season in a deck. But if you did, you'd have pretty reliable Hunter Quarry stuff.
Stuff, so. Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting.
Something to consider as we ponder.
Yeah.
Great Tremors is the final gambit of the set. Roll 5 attack dice. For each roll of a crit, pick one feature token and flip it. You cannot pick the same token twice. This is the trollest card of them. This is called the Great Troll.
This is a funny one. I thought it was a little bit worse than it is. I did the math on it, and you have like a 40% chance to not roll any crits. And you have like a 60% chance to roll one or more, and like a 20% chance to roll two or more. The interesting thing about it is that, unlike most of the other flipping tech, is that it has no range limitation. So I don't know. I don't know if you take this one, but if you're doing Feed the Beast Grave, maybe you do, just to get the one that's all the way on the other side of the board. Maybe you get lucky, you get to flip two of them. Maybe you get to flip one that's under an important enemy fighter. It is more powerful than a lot of the other flip cards. It's just, you know, 40% of the time it's going to do nothing. So I don't know if that makes it good enough to take, but it's a little better than I thought it was going to be. Because you should get one 60% of the time.
But how bad did you think it was going to be in the first place? Like, what's a little better than 0-1?
I guess I thought the average was a little bit lower, like, but I don't know.
I mean, I guess. I think you could roll 5 dice, get one, flip one, but I think there's just so much good flip tech now.
Yeah.
It's not even worth it. I mean, I can't wait to see or hear about someone rolling 5 crits.
It would probably be the 3rd or 4th flip tech that you take. I definitely think that, but
I think
I guess what I like about it is the potential for you roll it, and more than half the time you will get one crit, and then you say, okay, now the objective all the way over there that I'm nowhere near is going to flip, and there's just not anything they could do about that. So I think that's what I like about it, but we'll see if it makes it into a Feed the Beast Grave deck. There are a lot of other ways to do that. So
yeah, It's certainly interesting. And I guess you can flip it back too, right? So.
Yeah, I don't like it as much for that stuff. But
yeah, it's just something to, you know, think about. Okay, well, that's all 10 gambits. Some interesting ones, I think, for sure. Do you have a favorite, Jonathan?
Probably the Eternal Chase is my favorite gambit here.
It's a good card.
Yeah.
It's a very good card. Yeah, that doesn't really leave me with much.
I only picked one this time, so.
Yeah, if you had picked two, I couldn't have picked anything. Carnivore is all just because for Skaven shenanigans, which surprised you didn't pick that one because that's your air quotes that's favorite true. Warband.
That is going to be interesting. I think Untapped Resources is also one to think about.
Certainly.
Just keep it in mind.
Certainly.
But yeah. Interesting. I guess we'll go to the upgrades. The first one is Primal Lunge. Reaction. After an activation, discard the primacy token. If you do, this fighter makes one move action or attack action. Then discard this card. What do you think?
I'm going to do my best Agents of Sigmar impersonation right now.
Sure.
And go, ready for action! I don't know if you watch their vids, but they do that when someone plays ready for action. So,
yeah,
that was shout out to them. Days. Yeah, I'm a patron for them. They patron us. So,
yeah,
love that support right there. this is a great card. It is a very good card. So, yes, it's telegraphed. Sure. It doesn't really matter though, because it's after an activation. So it's kind of like Vision of Glory, where like your opponent can't do anything about it. Just kill the fighter that has the upgrade, or maybe try to lock them down. But the interesting thing is this one doesn't care if you have any tokens or not. Just like ready for action. You just discard it and then you make an attack or you make a move and then this card is discarded. So if you already had a charge token or a move token, you just gain, you know, a move token if you moved on top of that. So it's a very, very good card. And I think warbands like Moloch, Crushes, Mad Mob, even maybe Kanan might use this often, right? So interestingly, yeah. I don't think you'll see it much with Rippas, but I would like to see it on Rippas.
I think you could take it on Rippas. I think having the primacy token in general is going to be the determining factor for this. How good are you at getting primacy? So that you might be right about the Rippas there. I like it. I mean, I certainly I like it better than I would have liked to reprint of Ready for Action. so I think the fact that you have to have the primacy and I think the fact that you lose the primacy when you play it is nice. Of course, you may just gain the primacy back when your attack hits. So
for sure,
you know that's fine.
The whole point.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, there's a lot of good stuff you could do with that for sure.
Big fan.
Yeah.
Big mood.
let's see. The next one is Silent Shield, another silent relic. This fighter is a quarry. If this fighter is a quarry and in no one's territory, their defense characteristic is 2 block. This fighter is on guard. If this fighter has 3 or more silent relics, what do you think?
So it's cool because it makes you a quarry, which they all do that.
Yeah.
This is interesting because this pair is best with the sword because the sword gets a benefit for being in no one's territory because it becomes 3 damage instead of 2.
Yeah.
So out of all the silent relics I've seen so far, I think this is my least favorite.
Yeah. This one doesn't do anything on its own unless you're in enemy territory, whereas usually the other ones...
No one's territory.
Or, yeah.
Which is even worse.
Yeah.
Like enemy usually, territory would have been great.
Like, the other ones at least do something. Like, a couple of them have pretty bad reactions, but, like, that's something. This one just makes you a quarry unless you either have a bunch of them or you're in no one's territory. It is really good if you're in no one's territory. That's just not something you can count on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe you take it if you just want a bunch of relics and you want the stacking stuff, but probably not. Let's see. The next one is Soundless Step. Reaction after this fighter's activation, push this fighter 1x. I like that.
I really like this one.
Yeah.
It's a better duelist speed.
Yeah, pretty much. Yep, you can go on guard and then push. You can do all kinds of things. It's really good for the fighters that are going to make a lot of activations over the course of the round.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of sliding around, which is nice.
Slip and slide. Yep. Like a waterfall. You ever heard 21 Savage?
I don't think so.
Mm.
But yeah, it's good. I mean, they just reprinted Duelist Speed. I don't know if we need it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, you could double up.
Yeah.
Obviously, they share the same reaction window, but you can, you know.
Yeah. I mean, really, the only difference is that Duelist Speed can work in the power step if you're able to make an attack action. That's just kind of rare. Or does this have to be? This has to be after your activation.
I think this just straight up replaces Duelist Speed for sure. You're right. Yep.
Yeah. I think in general it does. The next one is Wicked Lash, which is a weapon upgrade. It is 2 range, 2 fury, 1 damage, but it has a special rule that says +1 dice and +1 damage if this fighter has 1 or more wound counters, +1 dice and +1 damage if the target has 1 or more wound counters. So it can go up to 4 fury and 3 damage.
Yeah.
Kind
of
cool.
I don't know why, but I just thought about this. So first of all, it's a really cool effect.
Yeah.
And I think one that's pretty balanced and one that's really cool if you manage to pull it off. There might be some situations in which like it just happens organically and you're just, your opponent's just like, crap. You know, 4 fury, 3 damage is pretty gnarly on 2 range.
Yeah.
What I really think would be fun is if you collapse your fighter and the opposing fighter and then make this attack action. Like, that's kind of cool too, you know? Overall, if you just want to look at it for face value, which I think it's the last card in the set. Yeah, it's 500 out of 500.
Oh yeah.
Very interesting. I think this is best set in a warband in which you expect to take wounds, but then also can heal the wounds. So interestingly enough, the big boys don't need this card because they just do great damage by themselves. You could maybe consider taking this in crushes, but I really think the benefit here is, as the card art indicates, is Dread Pageant. Because you want wounds. Hmm. You can heal wounds naturally. I think it's cool. I think it's very cool.
Yeah, I like that idea. I like it for Dread Pageant. I think that this competes with some of the other good weapon upgrades that you would consider, like the Silent Sword or the Amberbone Sword. It may just depend on what strategy you're doing as far as like quarry goes. I think that, I mean, in general, if you're trying to kill a fighter, if they're hurt at all, then you should be able to charge through a lethal, and then 3 damage will probably kill them. So, I don't hate that aspect of it. If you start throwing other upgrades on top of this, or you start playing things like Underdog or Inspired Attack along with this, it gets, or I guess Inspired Attack doesn't work because it's range 2. Maybe Underdog doesn't either. But I don't know. I think it's solid. I like this one.
Yeah, it's pretty solid.
Yeah. The next one is Driven by Hunger. Each time this fighter makes a move action, you can first remove 1 or more of this fighter's hunger counters. If you do, increase their move characteristic by that number for that action.
Yeah. Love the card art. neat mechanic or neat functionality.
Yeah.
Ultimately inefficient.
Yeah. Even for the Crimson Court, who this really isn't bad for. It's just not great. Like, I do like that you can sort of inspire somebody and then like maybe score a surge off of moving fast or something in the second round, but just not quite good enough at it. Next one is Eye for Weakness. Each enemy fighter with 1 or more hunger counters is a quarry.
It's just such a niche card. I cannot in good conscience recommend anyone to ever take this card because it's like, it's not efficient in championship play.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's just not.
What's really weird is that like you want to be a quarry. Being a quarry is great. So
exactly.
Being a quarry is
really good in this game.
Yeah.
It's arguably better than being a hunter.
Yeah. Usually. Because you can't score that much off being a hunter.
No, you just get access to cards that are all restricted now.
Yeah. Okay. The next one is Inured to Hunger. Reaction, use this during an attack action that targets this fighter after the determined success step. If you do, remove all of this fighter's hunger counters. Reduce the damage dealt to this fighter by that attack action by the number of counters removed to a minimum of one. What do you think?
So this is good for vampires.
Yeah, definitely.
This is a good card for them.
Yeah, it does telegraph a little bit. But other than that, like, solid.
I mean, if you put it on a fighter that they have to kill,
right?
They're going to have to go through that. And if,
yeah,
you know, at the very least, you have one or two hunger counters, maybe three. That's pretty solid. And the fact is, like, you could maybe give more in the power step and then react again the next time you attack. It's actually a very good card for Crimson Court.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good for them. The next one is Painful Brilliance. Plus one dice from range, or minus one dice from range three attacks, actions that target this fighter to a minimum of one, and minus one dice from attack actions that target this fighter instead to a minimum of one if you have the primacy token. What do you think about that?
So I don't mind the first effect. I think it's pretty cool. I wouldn't take a card just for the first effect. I think in conjunction together, it's much better. The stipulation is that primacy token, which I find to be somewhat irritating, though I think you could probably do this on like if you slap this on Molag or Kanan or Hrothgorn, I'm pretty sure you can retain the primacy counter often, or even like a Crusha, hell, even a Mad Mob, and your fighter becomes very difficult to hit. Aside from, yeah, actually any attack. So,
I mean, that's a real pain to deal with minus one dice, I think.
It's brilliant for how painful it is.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's really good. If you think you can take and then hold on to primacy for a couple activations, like,
that's a good card.
Yeah. The next one is Sanity. Oh, no, that's the Gambit. The next one is Armor of Disdain. This fighter is a quarry. If this fighter is a quarry, Gambits cannot deal damage to this fighter. And this fighter's move, defense, and wound characteristics cannot be modified.
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? The quarry part is fine. No gambits is great. Question, though, because like technically then you can't be damaged by rebound.
Right, that's true.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is if you have, let's say, massive bulk on Hrothgorn, and then you put this card on, does it negate massive bulk? Or because at the time of equipment, because your wound characteristic was 8, it cannot be modified past 8.
The way I read it is that it would no longer modify any of those anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think it could come up.
I think cannot overrides anything else in the rules.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would I can see the argument against that ruling or the way you would interpret it. Regardless.
Yeah.
If you like quarry and you're afraid of gambits, which you might be in the future, then I think this is a pretty solid card. Like, I don't mind sticking this on my fighter. I mean, if rebound wasn't restricted, this is probably a pretty good card, but I guess it's because it's restricted. I don't know. It's probably not making my 10, but it's something to think about, maybe.
Yeah. The way I see it is it's really just another quarry upgrade. And if you need that, then fine. I don't really put that much stock into the gambits damage part of it. And then obviously the modified part is kind of a downside. The last one is Driven by Envy. Plus one move, and then this fighter's attack actions have plus one dice and cleave if the target is a leader.
I don't really care for great speed, so
right.
That part is not relevant. And then plus one dice and cleave is good if it was in general, but if it's just because I'm targeting the enemy leader, then I'd rather just stick with Victimize.
Or Strength of Terror, or Augmented Limbs, or Savage Shoulder.
It's not a good card.
I mean, it's not awful. It's just there are so many better ones. Like,
It's so, yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, well, that is that. Did you have a favorite upgrade?
Yeah, Primal Lunge. For sure.
Yeah, I think mine may be Wicked Lash.
It's a good one. I also really do like Soundless Step, Painful Brilliance, and Inured by Hunger for Vamps.
Yeah.
So actually, 1, 2, 3, 5 upgrades is not that are pretty that we like aren't bad. Isn't bad.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
Saving grace, perhaps, for the universe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't really know how they decide to put what cards in which set, but I think this was a little bit of a weaker one compared to some of the ones that we've seen, but a couple good ones. Primal Lunge is probably the best one.
For sure.
And then there's a few other that you would consider in certain builds. So,
I mean, Carnivore's All, Eternal Chase. Those are good. And then if we go to objectives, you know, we talked about some of these. Perfect Strike, Proud Commander, Formidable Pull of Prey, Scant Resources. I mean, there's stuff here that can work if you want it to, right?
Yeah.
Peerless Hunter. So. Yeah.
And if you're playing Vanguard, which I know some people have been playing more of now that we have a wider card selection, then I think some of these get a little bit better as well.
So. Yeah. Okay. Well, cool stuff. Did you say you had a favorite? You did. You said Wicked Lash. Cool. Yeah. Okay. Well, that covers the review for Kanan's Reapers Universals. We sure do have some Patreon questions as well. But before we get into that, did you want to announce the winner of the contest?
Yeah, sure. We had our contest for the Mad Mob. We wanted to, we wanted you to submit your WOG, and the winner is going to be Val. It was
fantastic video.
Fantastic Val. Video.
Lots of attention to detail. I'll set the scene for you really quickly. Val is playing a wonderful game with who I presume to be his daughter at the table. He's playing Morgok's Crushes because he's a power gaming dad. And his presumably daughter is playing Iron Skulls Boys. So as you can see, there's a lot of WA energy building up right now. There's some Beastgrave terrain. Half of it is painted green. Again, I love the ambiance and the color palette. There's some green Underworlds dice being used, which is awesome. And then all of a sudden, it's only a 7-second video, but there's so much that this video tells. 3 seconds into it, a young man who, what I assume to be Val's child, jumps out from behind the couch wearing all green with green face paint, holding a mallet and a knife, which that's risky, Val, yells wah. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's honestly, I watched it 4 times. It doesn't get
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. We're happy to announce you the winner, and we'll talk to you about getting those orcs taken care of. So very
that's fun. Right. Thanks for participating, Val. Very nice. And very well put together video. I will have to say it's probably my favorite Patreon submission we've ever had, period. So good stuff.
Very cool.
Okay. Well, let's jump to Patreon questions. We've got a bunch here, and we're already longer than I thought we'd be going, so let's get this show on the road. First question from Thundrick. With the popularity of the Alliance format and apparent lack of popularity of Relic or Vanguard, do you have any ideas for any formats you would like to see?
Well, I actually have seen players asking for advice on Vanguard decks. It does seem like locally, as things are getting back up, some people are playing that format, probably because a lot of people haven't played in a while. But as far as other formats... one of the things I was thinking about is I do kind of like the idea of the pre-made deck that they came out with the Silent Relics. It would be interesting to have an event where, like, somehow you decide on a deck beforehand that everybody has to use, and then you just play different warbands with that deck. I'm not really sure how you would do that, but I don't know. That might be interesting.
Yeah. One that I would love to see, which I think your idea is cool, of like a magic, this magic style, or like everyone brings a war, like a warband, and then everyone gets the same cards. Like you buy the Silent Menace that day and you play with it. You know, that's kind of cool. I would like to see a 2-on-2 format where like two people are on the same team, actively playing against two people on the same team, sharing the same boards, maybe power or glory pool, etc.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a lot of fun. I think it'd be kind of complicated, maybe a little bit longer, but I think JD and I can kick some butt.
Yeah, so that'd be interesting. I don't think they've really done a true 2v2 yet. I mean, you can play multiplayer, but
I think a 2v2 would be fun, and you could probably limit it by Grand Alliance as well.
Yeah,
you know, and I think it'd be really fun if you just showed up to an event and you get randomly paired with a partner. You know,
that would be
fun. Then you're like, you and your partner are like, now or your teammate rather are now have to decide on a Grand Alliance based on the warbands that you may have not brought, and then boom, you know, play some games.
Oh, yeah,
that could be fun.
Yeah, and even if it wasn't Grand Alliance, it would be cool for you to bring something and then get randomly paired with someone else that has something you have no idea what it might be. So
yeah,
that's cool.
Very cool. Next question.
Sure. The next one is from Wathlab. Very simple question this time. How many universals did we get in the last 50 days? And a more complex one, how many significant meta shifts during that time?
Yeah. I don't know the number of universals. I will say it's... Actually, you could probably count. So 30, 30, 32, 92 universals.
Yeah. And then... Yeah. I guess. We're not counting the starter set, right?
If we do the essentials pack, that's 50.
Yeah.
So that's 142. And then I guess if you count Crimson Court, it's 182? No, 172.
Yeah. It's a lot.
It's a lot. How many significant meta shifts during that time? Honestly, maybe one or two, if that.
Yeah.
I feel like the rich got richer and that's it. Like strategies that have been working, keep working. And the reason being is there's no far.
Well,
that's ruining everything.
Some of the best cards in the game right now are still from Beastgrave and Arena Mortis.
Yeah.
So a lot of these new cards that come out are being overshadowed by the quality from the previous set. And then the ones that do, a lot of them just aren't seeing, you know, that much play is the way I'm looking at it. But yeah, I mean, I think we got some stuff. I think the glory stuff got a little bit better. I think creepers are on the map in a way that is real. Like I think the Wraith creepers are pretty legit.
Yeah, I'm playing them, so that
good. And I'm wondering how the Bone Reapers are going to affect things. So yeah. I mean, it's been a lot. It's certainly been a lot to pack into like a relatively small amount of time, for sure.
Yeah, I do think that the Crimson Court and Mad Bob functionally play similarly. So there's not much of a meta shift in terms of playstyle because they also kind of want to do what crushes do. I will say that the Essentials pack was a big meta shift because it brought back some old favorites and staples.
Yeah.
So you could say that there's two big meta shifts or decent enough to be considered meta shifts.
Yeah, but it was really like it just made things a little bit stronger. Like Glory Seeker and Duel of Wits were probably the two best things, but those sort of just replaced very similar cards people were already playing. So I'm not really sure how much it changed things.
And they kind of went in everyone's deck, so it's kind of a wash.
Yeah, they just immediately went into everything. So and like we've just seen a little bit less of Unnatural Truce and Sting of the Herb Rub or whatever.
So. Right on. Okay. Next question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Val asks, Wraith Creepers are OP because of their mechanics. I bet they can beat many warbands just with their pre-made deck. Or maybe I'm just so bad that I always lose against them. That's not true, Val. Question, would you nerf them? And if so, which of their cards would you restrict after Amon wins the WC with them, of course? You just jinxed me, thanks. He has also another question. Kanan's Reapers, are they the new Moloch's mob? But I guess we'll answer the Wraith Creeper questions first. I've been playing them a lot, but interested to see your take as a non-biased perspective.
I played them a few times. The main thing that I've taken away from them is that if you don't know how they work, they can be brutal. If you just walk in and inspire them and they just get to hit you over and over and over again, like just the math is just going to work out where they probably kill you. Because they're almost never going to have to make a charge if they don't want to. So a lot of the basics of the game where it's like the enemy has, you know, three fighters left, they can only make three charges. I can stay away from them and, you know, kind of force their mobility because of their range and the drum pushes. That's not really the case with them. So they can be very punishing if you play against them incorrectly is what I'm finding. And I think in the current meta of like big aggressive fighters, I think they do okay against them. I'm not sure. Maybe he's just being a little hyperbolic. I don't think their starting deck is that great. I feel like you should be able to beat that.
But I think it was probably one of those examples where he didn't know what was he getting himself into.
Yeah.
And he just got bamboozled.
Right. I mean, basically, if the leader gets inspired and you don't have a way to kill him and he gets fully upgraded, he's one of the most annoying and scary fighters in the game because he's so accurate.
Yeah.
He just needs damage. But
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like hard aggro probably hurts them. So I don't know. You've been playing a lot. What do you think?
Yeah. So I definitely think they have the similar weaknesses to the Harrows. But just like the Harrows, if they roll good defensively, like it's hard for you to do anything against them. I have been playing them competitively quite a bit. I'm not quite a bit, but just in like more recent events. And I would say that they are good. I don't think they're OP. Every game I've played, I've never 2-0'd anybody. I'm always dropped a game. Because it goes back to the weakness where it's, I am sometimes going to miss, and sometimes you're just going to like go like cleave through my defense, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
I played a league game the other day, and I rolled really well in the first game. My opponent conceded. Second round, I rolled no defense, and I just died, and I conceded. And then the third game, we had a proper game where it was back and forth, and you know that was fun. So I'm not necessarily sure if they're that hyped up as they're supposed to be. I know that Tommy was playing them. We've strategized a little bit, you know, as friends, and he did really well with them. And I think he was having more success with them than I was. Granted, he was playing them more, but you know, he got mologged, right? So it happens. You know, if you don't roll well and your opponent rolls hot, your warband will fall. So that's the kind of dynamic I'm seeing.
But they only have like 14 health. And if you aren't able to inspire the other ones, then they only have one defense to start out with. So I feel like
two of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Two of them.
And they both have three wounds.
Yeah. So I do feel like against fast, hard hitting aggro or the really big fighters that like Molog or Hrothgorn, I think that could give them some trouble. But I do think they're very strong, and I don't think you can just... I think you have to have a plan on how you're going to beat them, and maybe you just wait for them to come to you or something. But if you just go into the blender, it can be really, really bad. So
yeah. The way they inspire is actually quite punishing if you kind of fall into it. I will say, in terms of restrictions, I think a lot of what makes the Warband really good right now are universal cards. They don't really have very many faction cards that are like, oh my god, this is amazing. I guess if I was to restrict a card or two, right, maybe I would start with methodical attacks, because
that's, it's just the pretty attack much again, right,
attack again card.
Yeah.
And then from a upgrade perspective, it's probably either Pall of Fear,
that one's really
which
good.
Is pretty solid card, or maybe Bitter Strength. But I kind of like Bitter Strength remaining unrestricted just because it's a +1 damage card. So, you know, I would say either I would one of these three: Methodical Attack, Pall of Fear, or Ethereal Hunters, where you charge through an occupied hex.
And basically, they would probably just stop taking that card and it would just be way less card that they use. But I mean, I think their real strength is their drumbeat reaction plus their inspire condition and then just the range that they have. So
the thing is you'll never kill the patrician unless they expose the patrician. So you just have to deal with it.
I mean, you might be able to dive in with Rothcoin or something. you know,
it's very hard to do wings. It's very hard to do that.
Yeah.
Especially because you're playing with a board with block Texas.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
Okay.
Well, yeah. You can finagle it to do well. His last question was, Kanan Reapers are the new Molag's Mob. What do you think?
I don't think so. We kind of talked about it before. I mean, I think Kanan is a powerful fighter. I think he might be I think he's more like Hrothgorn than he is Molag. I don't think he fundamentally breaks the game, which is what I think about Molag. So, yeah. I think there's more to that warband. I think the leader is a strong part of it. I think if you are able to control the leader, then they can still operate, but you know, they're not completely out of the game. And if the leader, but the leader also can't just roll over your entire warband in the same way. So you can't, and if you decide it's better for you to ignore him, then you can farm the five of the other dudes. So I don't actually mind, you know, big fighters and big powerful fighters and having to make those choices. I feel like this warband lets you do it. So if that's what he means by the new Molag, then I would say no. But I also haven't played it yet, so I could be wrong.
Yeah. I don't think he's as bad as Molag. For the reasons you mentioned about fundamentally circumventing the core rules of the game and abusing them. I do think that Kanan is what Molag would have been, where you have a really strong, beefy fighter, but worst case scenario, you get three attacks a game.
Well, you know? Yeah. I mean, he'll probably get more because he has range two, but...
yeah, that's why I said worst case scenario.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I got you. Yeah, that makes sense. The next one is from Kyler. I guess it's kind of the same question. Is this new Bone Daddy just another Molag Mantrapper, or has GW managed to design a balanced big boy? Or is the Bone Daddy already OP due to being a wizard and having access to cards that other big boys don't? I don't know. I mean, other than the Lost Pages, I don't know if the wizard thing really matters. What do you think?
The Lost Pages thing is a big deal, though.
Yeah.
For people who are thinking about tomes.
Yeah.
Right? There is enough passive glory in this current meta to where you can arguably do that. You do have, unlike Molag, you do give up a lot of glory because you have five other fighters. I don't think all of them will die during the course of the game. I do think that if that excess is curbed or is not viable, then I do think the warband is actually pretty balanced because almost all of the cards and objectives like want you to be playing with your Mortex.
Right.
Or Brotex, rather. So
yeah.
If you're not playing into your Brotex, you're innately taking away some of the ability that and functionality that your warband should have.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly don't think he's better at doing Molag and Hrothgorn rampage type things than they are. So I think he's at least like he's like fighter to fighter, he's worse than Molag. And maybe I'm not even sure if he's better than Hrothgorn. I think I like Hrothgorn a little bit better. And so I don't know. I think you have to use the little guys a little bit more, even if it's just to hold objectives and control the board, which has its own weaknesses like Mischievous Spirits and things like that. So, in the couple decks that I've made, he's a part of the warband, but he's almost more like the Briar Queen or like the Warden in the Skeletons, where like he's there to mess you up if you go in at me and my little guys, or maybe I'll go in and get aggressive and while I distract from my little guys. I don't quite see it the same way as Molag and Hrothgorn, where the little guys aren't going to do anything basically the whole game. So, I don't know. I see it as being very different from those two. But
I mean, obviously, I still have my reservations. Like,
yeah,
I inherently think big boys are not good for this game. So,
yeah,
I think the way in which this warband has been presented is the most balance that I can perceive it to be when compared to previous incarnations of big boys.
Yeah.
in actuality, will reality be like that? Who knows? We'll see. Let's play games.
That's true. That's
Find
true.
Out.
I guess he has I guess Hussman has a question similar to this. What does he think the preferable play style is for the Reapers, even with low wound fighters? Or even the low wound fighter seems solid with a 2-block when inspired. Do you think they're a bit too strong overall? How manageable is their inspire mechanic?
Preferable play style for me, per the last podcast, is Kanan do as much damage as he can. The rest of the guys hold objectives. I think that's what I'm seeing first.
Yeah.
I know that there is like a Brotec build that you can play. I do think the low fighters seem solid when inspired. I think it's really hard to be inspired. And, you know, maybe with some good dice, you inspire end of the first round, mid, early second round. That's fine. But I don't know. I don't think the warband is overstated. I do think people are overreacting a little bit. And I think the most important thing to do is to just play games and figure it out. I could be wrong. We could all be wrong. They could be broken. I don't know. I just don't, my gut feeling is telling me they're not. And I think it's a lot harder to inspire than people think it is.
Yeah. I think the inspire is very difficult. I think there's a lot of warbands that are, I guess the big thing right now is the heals are pretty good for the leader. So if you take a couple heals, it may be hard to kill him, but I also think you can just ignore him and go after the little ones. So,
or just shut him down with three nets.
Yeah.
Energy drain, winded.
Yeah. And like in the decks I've been putting together, I'm basically playing an hold objective strategy, which there are just a lot of tools against that right now. So yes, I have a really big guy that you have to deal with. But like you can still stop me from holding objectives. So I don't know. I mean, to me, it seems, I don't think he seems as innately powerful as Hrothgorn and Molag, and I think the way that he has to win games is a little bit more balanced. So, I've made two decks so far. One of them was more of an aggressive build with Vision of Glory and Strength of Terror and, you know, a bunch of damage and wounds and stuff, and then some punching up and some of the more tech ploys and stuff to soup them up and just basically make everybody a threat. And then I'm holding objectives and mainly holding objectives in my objective deck, along with some of the obvious stuff like Strength of Show of Force and whatnot. And then the other one was basically the quarry build, where I took out some of the damage and some of the health and put in all the quarry stuff. So I think both of those look okay. I plan to try them both, and we'll see what I think is better. So
yeah, I mean, keep in mind, everyone, the warband is like 24 hours old right now.
Yeah,
so I don't, we. Well, yeah, I mean, Jonathan has built a couple of decks. I haven't even had the opportunity to. So, you know, obviously you think about stuff and combos, but
yeah,
it's nothing like actually playing.
A lot of this is just like the first impressions and like my, you know, when I think about the game and the war bands and how everything is going to work together, it's like math floating everywhere, you know? I know what's going on.
So. Yeah, but, you know, half the time we really don't.
Yeah.
So. Next question, still by Hussman. General question: most of the season 4 warbands have a specific resource they need to manage in order to unlock their full potential. Examples include wounds, hunger, primacy, bone tithes, aether quartz, etc. Others have a reaction or ability they need to manage to function well, like skittish or desecration. As such, do you all think most future warbands will also utilize some sort of resource as an additional game mechanic? What challenges do you expect with these mechanics moving forward? What new resource mechanics would you like to see in future warbands? For me, I don't really mind all the warbands having some unique method in which they operate. I do think it's quite refreshing, actually, when you compare them to season 1, 2, and 3 warbands, especially season 1 warbands and some season 2 warbands. So I think it brings another level to the game, another sort of resource management, which I think is really refreshing and fun, and it can really help challenge players who've been playing this game since season 1. One other thing that I want to really think about is, you know, we're talking about, do I think all other future warbands will have the same mechanics? Probably not. I don't know if all future warbands are going to need mechanics or counters or, you know, the reaction stuff is fine because, like, abilities should be different. Like, you know,
yeah.
That just makes fighters unique. And I'm a big, big, big fan and believer that every fighter should be functionally different or unique in some way. When it comes to challenges, I don't like it when, in this example, like, there's a seasonal mechanic called Hunger and Primacy, and then there's one warband that's really good at Hunger, and there's one warband that's arguably the best at Primacy.
Yeah.
Arguably. And then they just, like, have an influx of cards that only really are functioning for them. And then the worst part is when this season rotates, those warbands are now, like, what just happened?
I mean, yeah, they're going to certainly take a hit in some way. And they may still be viable, but they're going to be a lot worse.
Yeah.
You'd think. I agree. I mean, the reason that what I like to do in this game is, you know, pick a warband and try to make it work. And if it has, you know, some of that is the faction cards and how the fighters work. But if there's unique mechanics and resources and stuff that you have to manage, I think that's really cool. What was the other question? I wouldn't mind if every warband from now on had their own little mechanic or mini game or something. So I'm not sure what new resources I would like to see. I've always thought it would be cool if there was, I think I've said this before. I think it'd be cool if there was a warband that, like, started out inspired and then somehow got worse as the game went on. I don't really know how they would balance that, but, that would be cool. I don't know.
I think there's a lot of ways in which warbands can still be unique.
Oh yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily have to involve a counter or a resource. But I think certainly there are a lot of mechanics that I can think of just right off the top of my head that I think we haven't seen yet. And also the game is always evolving. There can be new keywords. There can be new seasonal mechanics. There can be new, things to do with the boards or the feature tokens. I mean, there's just so much.
Yeah, I agree. The next one is from Fry. Do you think that the limitations on the Bone Tithe counters are enough to counter their inspired strengths and their cards that spend counters? My gut says that the fact that there's only two conditional plays for gaining the Bone Tithe and that you actually have to get kills is a better balancing factor than, say, crushes. What do you think?
I 100% agree with Fry. I think what you and I have both been saying since yesterday is that Inspire is difficult. Hypothetically, even if you said Molog's mob inspires when they kill three fighters, that makes Molog a significantly worse warband.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, dice can, you know, ruin his day. Same with Kanan. Same with the Bone Reapers. Obviously, there are going to be some games where you just roll hot or your opponent can't roll a defense, die to save their life.
Yeah.
But I think it's a much, much better limitation in terms of their strength. And if you're able to get the Bone Tithe counters you need, the Tithe counters, your opponent is either misplaying, in which case you're already ahead on the board, or you've deserved to inspire because you just played really well.
Yeah. I mean, I think the number, like, if it was two, it would be too easy. Mm-hmm. But I think three is kind of tricky. I mean, if you're playing against, like, a, you know, vampires or orcs or whatever, like, killing two of them is, like, a pretty, like, big deal, like, halfway through the game. So, like, they should be, the vampires or whatever should be able to do some pretty significant damage to you in the meantime. I think to me, that's what is making this warband fairly balanced, is that, like, I don't think the Inspire is going to happen that much, or it's going to happen really late in the game. I think if I'm playing against them and you play any of the Bone Tithe cards, I'm just going to let you have the other effect, like, 9 times out of 10. So I'm not going to just let you get the tokens. So,
yeah, I'm not going to give you Tithe counters. For sure.
Yeah. And in order to do that, you have to be using the Mortex, which is what I want you to do anyway. So
yeah, so I can kill them. Exactly.
Right. So it's like there's interaction there. So I mean, to me, that doesn't seem like there's nothing I could do, which is really my only complaint when it comes to things like Mala, because there's a lot of times when I don't feel like there is anything I can do. So I feel like there's a lot of different things you could do against these guys. So
yeah, agreed. Good question. Next one is from Wathlab again. In a hyper aggro meta where only a few warbands still play around objectives, of course, there's the hold two, hold more playstyles, and where there are plenty of speed tools, is a card like Distraction still worth a slot? How did the value of a card like Distraction evolve since late season 3?
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting.
Further, I will say Distraction goes in every single one of my decks.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that. The way I think about it is, I guess it probably does. It may not be quite as good as it was previously, where one distraction could mean the difference between like an uncontested and a path to victory. And, you know, like, so maybe there's not quite as much glory in the end phase in the same way as there was before. But it's even if that's the case, it's still one of the best cards in the game. And you want as many of them as you can take, because like it messes up scoring, it moves enemy fighters around. I guess in a situation where if theoretically distraction isn't quite as good as it was before, then sidestep gets a little bit better probably. But sidestep's also a really great card, and now we have the better version of sidestep for quarries, heated instinct. So, but I mean, pushes are just one of the best things ever. I remember when one of my very first games, I feel like everybody at the beginning doesn't think pushes are that good. And then in one of my early games, I did like a sidestep confusion, whatever combo, and ended up like getting like a double kill, like attack and then sidestep and then confusion and then attack. So, you know, and like, I was like, oh, like I can move around and this is great, you know? And ever since then, like, I just love all the pushes. So,
yeah, I think we can both agree distraction is very good.
Yeah.
And then I think for the evolutions in season 3, that's an interesting question. I feel like there's a part of me that says like it hasn't really evolved much for me. Like I'm still using it for the same purposes. I think maybe in season 2 I was using it for push you into lethal or bring you closer to me so I can hit you.
Yeah.
I think in season 3, it became more of a, I'm trying to deny your end phase scoring. Also push you into lethal and bring you closer to kill you.
Well, there was also like a brief period where you were going to just push everybody out of the way and then score a bunch of surge stuff with Grimwatch or whatever, or Thorns.
Yes. And then I think for season 4, it's just evolved into a card that's just so... like ambiguous, like it's so good at everything it does.
Yeah.
That it kind of lines up to be the perfect card you need in a lot of situations. Do I think you have, you know, dominant position? Okay. Push. Do I need to kill your fighter? Okay, come here. Oh, you have one wound left? Okay, no, you're dead because you're next to a lethal.
Yeah.
You know, oh, you're trying to score unafraid? Nope, bye. Like there's just so many good ways in which you can do it. That I think the card, I guess it has evolved into like, candidly, I think one of the best cards ever to be in this game, period.
Well, and I guess that's interesting because we did have the brief period of time when it went away, when it cycled out of season 1. And then I think that was when we realized like, oh, this card is great and we miss it. And then it came back in the gift pack. And then we got another one with Nightmare in the Shadows. And then we realized like, oh, you want as many of these as you can get. And now we have the Mortis Relics, and now we have a few other similar cards. And I would say up until the Essentials pack, the distractions really outnumbered the self-pushes like sidestep. But now I think we have a number of other self-pushes to compete. And I do wonder how that will affect the meta moving forward. Like Heated Instinct is really good. It's a better sidestep. And we have commanding, what is it? The card where you can push someone that's not your leader or put them on guard.
Oh, Inspired Command.
Yeah. So we have more pushes, and So it'll be interesting to see like what's more valuable now. Like, does that make distraction effects more valuable because you're going to try to arms race against all the pushes, or something else? So it's a good question. It's interesting because it's a card we've almost had the entire game, all four seasons. So
yeah, and it rotates presumably this fall, and it's like, what am I going to do?
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of looking forward to that because I like it when there's not an obvious option and maybe I have to take a hypnotic buzz or I have to take a center of attention or things like that. So
yeah, I do think that it certainly hurts mirror move and center of attention, but
yeah,
those cards are in the game forever, allegedly. So
yeah. Good question though.
Yeah, very good question.
Next one's from Beard Arm. The universal cards that are included in the Bone Guys include some support for objective flipping, providing more options for Feed the Beast Grave style decks. Is Feed the Beast Grave a style of play that you think is good for the game? Is it a style of play that should continue in the game once Beast Grave cycles out? I have no strong opinion myself. It's just me thinking.
Yeah.
Or it just has me thinking.
It's a good question. I think... So I'm not really invested in the Feed the Beast Grave conversation as much as maybe some other people I know are. Yeah. I think if I look at it objectively, is it cool for a strategy to exist that will completely destroy another strategy's game plan? And in some cases, for it to be highly executable if you can just draw your gambits and upgrades? And then maybe just move. Like, there's no dice rolling involved. It's just moving around. Then I think I have an issue if you were to explain any other scenario. Like, I'm not even saying Feed the Beast Grave in that situation. All I'm saying is if there's a mechanic or a strategy that shuts down one popular, essential style of play by just drawing cards and moving, do you think that's good for the game? I think anyone would say no.
Or at least from my perspective. Potentially, yeah.
Or at least potentially. Like, is it bad for the... Sorry, is it good for the game? I would say no. Maybe, you know, you'd say potentially, maybe not. And so I kind of don't want it to exist. And I've heard some of the arguments against it, and I understand those players' frustrations. And I can empathize. And for me, that's important. On the other hand, maybe in like season 3 or beginning of season 4, you would say that it is very difficult and tactical to do it. But I think now with all the support, especially with some of the cards that came with the Reapers, I do think that maybe we're too far down the line now and it needs to be either reined in or no longer supported after season 3 rotates.
Yeah. I know for me, I kind of wonder how good it actually is. I think objective play has kind of evolved to where you really only need two objectives a lot of the time. I can't hear you if you're talking.
I was answering a call. Oh, were you asking me a question?
No. I just saw your mouth movement. So I was saying, I don't really know how good Feed the Beast Grave actually is. I mean, maybe I need to play against it. But I think that if you build a modern objective deck that's trying to dominate position and even path to victory, which I'm kind of so-so on recently. I wonder if you can't still function long enough and try to stop the Feed the Beast Grave strategy. I really think Hrothgorn's the only one that can really do it very well. Maybe the Skinks can do it, but I don't think they're great at it. I don't know. I guess I have to see it in action and wonder if there are strategies that you can take against it. I think some of the new cards like Symbiote's Call and Living Land potentially help. Like, those are cards that I think objective warbands want to take, and I think they potentially work against Feed the Beast Grave. So I would be willing to see what happens and like see if the meta can figure it out and see if it actually is, like, if it actually does like hard shut down, you know, a core play style. And if it did, then I would hope that it was, you know, balanced out a little bit. But I mean, I think Hrothgorn's really good without it. So I'm not even sure if it's like, I wonder if Feed the Beast Grave is the best way to play Hrothgorn or is the best way to play Seraphon. And when they do play that way, is it really a free win against like the good objective stuff? Like, is it really a free win against Grimwatch and Thorns? Like, I'm not sure if I think it is. So I would want to see more games. I would want to see more events, you know.
Which is hard to do right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I'm just going off the opinions of a couple people that I am close to.
Yeah.
So I'm more than happy to take a step back. But I still think the whole idea of it shutting down objective play does make me question its long-term health for the game.
I'm not a big fan of it because I don't think it's that fun for either player. It's probably fun for the it's probably more fun for the person trying to do it. But if you didn't know how it worked already and you just ran into it, you were trying to play objectives, it wouldn't be a great experience. But that aside, I'd be interested to know if it was actually like a balance issue. But
yeah, like I think it's more fun to try to score Infestation or Coveted Spoils rather than Feed the Beast Grave, right? Yeah. So
I also like the Test of Courage with that strategy too. Like I think there's a lot of good flipping and like that sort of thing. Strategies.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm just not really sure how good Feed the Beast Grave actually is.
I forgot about Test of Courage. It was really good back in the day with Thorns.
Yeah.
Still is, I guess.
Probably. I think they just kind of fell off a little bit after they got hit by the Blast Four.
Well, they've got a bunch of support now, so
yeah,
they're pretty good now. Last question. Do you want... So this is from Magor. Is Kanan too good with Ferocious Resistance, Spirit Calm, Healing Potion, and other healing cards?
Maybe. I have two of those. I have Ferocious Resistance and Spirit Calm in my... my deck, so I do think that that helps. I think that if you didn't have those available, then I think killing him really would be an option. And I don't want that to happen. I don't know if I think it makes him too good. If you just ignore him, those cards are pretty useless. And he's not going to go on quite the same rampage that a Moloch would do. So I don't know. I'm not a big fan of those cards, but I think they are good for him. So.
Yeah, I would echo your sentiments there. Do you think focusing on the Mortex is a good strategy? The Brotex. The Brotex build.
I think it is a good strategy for some warbands. And it also, there will be certain points in games when it becomes the better strategy. Like maybe what you do is you hit Kanan early for 2 or 3 damage and then see if he's able to heal back up. If he's not, maybe you can finish him off. If not, maybe you should go for the Mortex. I don't know. I'm really going to have to see how other people are playing him. And I think once you know the opponent is trying to play, then you'll then it'll be more clear. But I mean, a lot of the time with Hrothgorn, there's a point where you're just like, okay, I'm not going to kill Hrothgorn anymore. I'm going to try to ignore him. I'm going to let him get a charge. He's going to get one kill. And then I'll just keep trying to kill everybody else. And I think it's going to be the same way.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I read this question a little differently. Do you think focusing on the Mortex is a good strategy, as in for the Reapers? I'm not really sure what Magor is asking, but I think maybe it'd be better. So you answered one side of it, and I agree with you. I do think that, actually, going back to the way you answered the question, I agree. I'll let Kanan charge me 3 times or hit me 4 or 5 times over the course of the game, or try to at least.
Yeah.
But I'm going to kill all your Mortex before you inspire, because they become more annoying than Kanan does after a while. Because Kanan's already annoying, especially with Karu and Senna going to 2-block.
Yeah, you really don't want to let all of them inspire, is the other thing. Like, they actually do get kind of annoying. And then if you start playing things like punching up and just normal upgrades or weapon upgrades, like, they're kind of annoying. So,
yeah. And like, interesting fact about me is that, like, I am so used, I played so much Profiteers, and like, the only 2-block fighter I really came across with was like Cursebreaker or Slag Squig.
Yeah.
And like, I had Cleave, so I never really thought 2-block was that good.
Yeah.
And then like now, recently, I've realized that 2-block is like pretty damn good.
Yeah, it is.
Because I'm no longer cleaving everything. So it's actually really funny how that worked for me.
There's a lot more guard in the game now too.
Yeah, that's also another thing, which I guess it comes up more often. In terms of building a Brotec build, I don't know, man. I have no clue. I'm not even going to front. Like, I think no matter what, So yeah, you can enjoy some of their faction specific cards, but no matter what, I think there's going to be like a Hidden Purpose and Swift Capture in there, or like Emissary, or what's it called? Emissarian.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about? The Pride of the Emissarian cast. Like, the thing is like Kanan is still your linchpin, no matter what strategy you play. It's just, are you going to charge in with some of the other guys? And I think the answer is, it depends in both situations. The way that I'm thinking to play this warband is I have Kanan, Kenta, and Hakor as my like frontline fighters. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe like, and if they die, so be it. But, you know, they're going to just try to do as much damage as they can, because that's pretty much like, it's pretty much Magor's Fiends inspired, right? In a way, in terms of their attack profiles. And then I've got like Noam, who's probably on the closest objective in friendly territory, so he can shoot when needed, maybe do 2 damage off of support. And then I've got Karu and Senna, like, hopefully they get the 2 block and they just chill on an objective. Yeah. And that's what's scoring me the dominant positions, the Hidden Purposes, the you know, other cards as well. So that's my philosophy. And either way, like, I can see myself like being a little bit more cagey with some of my supporting cast, even Kanan, or being a bit more aggressive, where I'm like, you know what, I'm going to charge Gnome into enemy territory, you know, so he can, you know, support and maybe finish off a fighter, things like that. So I don't know if there's no real answer, but I would love for the Mortek build to be better. I think that's more fun. I just don't think the universal cards right now make it as efficient as it could be.
Yeah. I mean, my analysis is that so far is just that I think you're going to have to focus on them a little bit, because unlike Molog, I don't think Kanan can carry the whole warband all by himself. And in some ways, unlike Hrothgorn, because Hrothgorn can at least, like, he has his ranged attack, and he has some better upgrades to be more durable. So I think if you build, like, if you just make a Hrothgorn or a Molog deck and then port it over to this, and the opponent realizes that, I think they can just throw everything at Kanan, and if they kill him, you probably just lose. So I think you have to focus on doing something with the little guys, whether it's aggro or hold objective. And if that's true, then I think that's how it works. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I'm interested to see everybody getting their hands on them and try them out.
Yeah, for sure. I'm very excited to seeing what happens and how people go about their day and stuff. So, and their games. And I want to be pleasantly surprised with the Brotex. I really do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't want to assume it's another Molog variant, well, you know?
The interesting thing is, I don't really know how you would play it that way. I guess you would take a lot of heals, you would take a lot of pushes, and then you would slowly move, like, would you just move him towards the enemy and then make attacks and try to push around? I don't think you can. I just don't know if that works. And like, Hrothgorn's big thing is that he gets all of the Quarry Hunter stuff for free. And so if he gets one attack, he might score like 2 or 3 surges, and he has all the objective removal stuff, which these guys don't have. So I don't know. I feel like if you're ignoring the Mortex, you're going to be at a pretty big disadvantage.
So, well, that's true. Yeah. It's a lot to think about, honestly.
Yeah.
It's true. Well, I think that does it for all the questions. So, at the risk of this being our first 2-hour episode in a while.
Oh, wow.
There's nothing wrong with that, but I think...
Yeah, that's a lot of questions.
It's just 30 cards. Just 30 cards.
Yeah, we appreciate all the questions, but I think that is going to be it for this episode. Once again, thank you to our patron supporters. If you'd like to join us, or you'd like to join our current patrons, you can do so at patreon.com/pathtoglory. You can find all of our blog content on pathtoglorypodcast.com. If you have any feedback, questions, or comments, let us know on Facebook, Twitter, or Discord at Path to Glory Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. As always, thanks for listening, and we wish you the best of luck on your path to glory.
Do you think Brodus would get along with the Brotex? Because Brodus is the king of all bros.
I think he's going to scything attack them, and it's going to be a bro disaster.